Welcome to Reconquest on the Crusade channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre Marie coming to you from St. Benedict Center in Richmond, New Hampshire. Our websites are Catholicism.org and Reconquest.net. My email address is bam@Catholicism.org. I can also be found easily on Twitter @Brother_Andre and on Facebook. Our topic this evening is Queen Isabella's Holy Life. My guest is Dr. Alexandra Wilhelmsen, professor of Spanish and adjunct professor of history at the University of Dallas. We're discussing this evening Queen Isabella, the Catholic, La Católica, as she is called. And I'm going to summarize her life very, very quickly so that I can get to the interview with Dr. Wilhelmsen as soon as I can. She was called La Católica, by the way, by the Pope, Alexander VI, who happened to be a Spaniard and therefore her countryman. She was the most Catholic queen of Castile, and as wife of Ferdinand II of Aragon, she was also the queen consort of Aragon and Sicily. Her life is beautifully summarized on the website of queenisabel.org, which promotes her cause, in this fashion. Queen Isabel the Catholic changed the face of the world. She was instrumental in the defense of Christianity in Europe. She sponsored the discovery of America, began the largest evangelization campaign since the apostles, won the longest war in history, promoted women and prohibited slavery, was a devoted wife and mother of five, and she codified universal human rights. Isabel loved Christ. She made herself God's humble instrument, and God worked mightily through her. So without any further ado, I am going to bring on and welcome our guest, Dr. Alexandra Wilhelmsen. Again, she's the professor of Spanish and adjunct professor of history at the University of Dallas. Good evening, Dr. Wilhelmsen.
Good evening, Brother Andre, and thanks for inviting me again onto one of your programs.
And thank you so much for being here. So first, before we start getting into details of her holy life, why would we even want to be discussing Isabel la Católica today?
Well, I think the name of your program, Reconquest, reminds us, as you just said very briefly, that when you read that summary of her life, that she ended with a climax, a great success, the long, long Christian reconquest of the Iberian Peninsula that had started 720-something years before when she led the reconquest of the Kingdom of Granada. But we're emphasizing today her holy and spiritual life, and so Queen Isabel is up for beatification by the Catholic Church. And there are very few rulers who have been beatified or canonized, and so this is very important.
Mm-hmm. And of Spain, how many monarchs of Spain have been canonized? We talked about St. Ferdinand III before. Is he it?
Well, he's the only ruler. Now, I think there may have been a queen consort in Portugal who was of Spanish background. But the only Spanish ruler who has been canonized was, of course, St. Ferdinand in the 13th century.
Okay. Now, okay, so tell us, I guess we should sort of begin at the beginning. So tell us a little bit, if you will, about her childhood and her early family life.
Well, Queen Isabel, of course, was from Castile, the largest kingdom in the Iberian Peninsula. She belonged to the Trastamara dynasty, and she was brought up in the midst of total chaos. She lived, of course, in the late Middle Ages or the early modern age, that transition that we know as the Renaissance, the waning of the Middle Ages and the Renaissance. And everything was in chaos at the end of the Middle Ages. And so her father was John II of Castile, and her older half-brother was Henry IV, two rulers who were very, very weak rulers and incompetent rulers, frankly. And life was chaotic at that time. during the waning of the Middle Ages, every country was in bad shape, but it's possible that Castile was even worse. I don't know. Mm-hmm. There was disintegration. There was corruption. There was violence. There was scandal in high places. Traveling was unsafe. There were private armies fighting each other. Tax gatherers were, there were very few who were honest. And then there was the plague, and there was famine, you know, and there were droughts. I mean, nothing was going well. And when John II died, he by then was estranged from his second wife. That was Queen Isabel's mother. And so Queen Isabel and her tiny brother Alfonso were raised at the castle in Arevalo by their mother, away from the court. That was good because the court was so scandalous. But the castle, I've been to the castle of Arevalo. It's a darling, cute castle, but it's tiny. And it's sort of in the middle of nowhere. In other words, it's not much more than a nice mansion. No, I shouldn't even say that. A nice manor house, okay? So she and her brother were raised there by their mother, who was very pious and, you know, good mother. She made sure that they were very well educated. They had good tutors. But she gradually, little by little, lost her mind, the mother. Now, she didn't become stark raving mad, but she withdrew from society and was not able to be very supportive of her daughter in her teenage years. Well, when Isabel was 11 and her brother by then, her half-brother Henry IV was ruling, he called for her, summoned her to go to the royal court, which he frequently held at the castle in the city of Segovia, not too far from Arevalo. The particular castle is the Great Alcázar. You've seen pictures of it many times. Many of your listeners will have also. It's the castle that was used by Disney as a model for Disneyland. Yeah, okay. Beautiful castle. So she, when she went to court at age 11, separated from her mother, she saw the scandalous behavior of people at the court. And fortunately, she was able to hang on to the values that her mother had taught her. So she lived for quite some time in Segovia, and her brother, who was 3 years younger, did too. And I mean, their father had died when they were little, and they were there with their half brother and his second wife, who was a scandal. And somehow Isabel managed to come through it all. But she spent a good deal of time in Segovia, and she was very popular with the people of Segovia.
Hmm. Now, Enrique was her half-brother, correct?
Yes, Henry IV.
When he ruled as Henry IV, and he was a fairly dissolute person. I think it was rumored that he was a homosexual, and the heir or the pretended heir that he produced, quote-unquote, to the throne by his wife was actually the daughter of another man, right? One of his courtiers?
Well, this is a big problem. Nobody really knows. Henry IV was abused as a child and taken advantage of by everybody around him. Nobody ever loved this poor man, you know, and he had lots of psychological problems.
And he was physically deformed, too, wasn't he?
He was a very tall, handsome man.
Tall,
handsome, blonde, and you know there are not that many blondes in Spain, so that always impresses Spaniards. But at some point he had broken his nose, and apparently it was quite deformed.
Okay, because I read something about a deformity somewhere.
That's probably what you were thinking of, his whole court was dissolute, and he was married to a princess from Navarre for 8 years, and there were no children, and the marriage was annulled on the grounds that the marriage had never been consummated. Well, that's where he got the name, or the sobriquet, Henry the Impotent, mm-hmm. Enrique el Impotente. But then he married again. He married a Portuguese princess. The Portuguese and the Castilian royal families were constantly intermarrying, hoping to have a common heir to both their kingdoms, right by one another, you know. And this lady turned out to be totally dissolute. She had various children while married to him. And there's only one that might have been apparently, his, a little girl named Juana. But most of the people at the time did not think that she was the king's daughter, and so they nicknamed her La Beltraneja, the little Beltran.
After Beltran, who was this courtier, right?
Yeah, Beltran de la Cueva, the courtier. So it was always very dubious. Nobody really knew whether this little girl was technically the king's daughter or not. So she ended up being one of the tragic figures of the Renaissance. There were wars and battles fought over the succession, but eventually she was shunted off to a monastery, a convent in Portugal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so Henry was totally ineffective as a king, and I mean, he was controlled by his courtiers, and it was just a disaster.
You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network. This is Brother Andre. I'm interviewing Dr. Alexander Wilhelmsen. We're talking about Queen Isabel of Spain, La Católica, and her holy life. So in the midst of all of this moral dissolution of her half-brother's court and growing up in similar circumstances earlier, aside from that time when she was in that sort of bubble where she was being raised by her pious mother, she was exposed to a lot of unsavory stuff, but she kept her Catholic wits about her and her good morals.
Yes.
Let's take her a little bit further down, let's get her a little bit older. There were questions about who was to succeed, and there were various... when Enrique died, wasn't there a brief time when her brother Alfonso reigned?
Well, yes and no. There were three different possible rulers. Juana, that all depend on whether one accepted that she actually was the king's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And he proclaimed her his heiress and then undid it and then proclaimed her heiress again. So this was very, very confusing, and a lot of people wanted Isabel. Well, she stood by the side and was very careful never to rebel against her brother, knowing mm-hmm. that would have been treason. And then there was her younger brother, Alfonso. Of course, Alfonso would have come before her in the line of succession. Well, Alfonso was used. He was proclaimed king in Avila, where I grew up, as a figurehead of one of the factions that were fighting there. People were trying to use these teenagers to fight their own battles. And eventually he died at the age of 14. And that left Isabel and Juana, the two girls.
And she never accepted the fact that he was legitimately king, right? They sort of propped him up on the throne in this scandalous
endeavor. She highly resented that her 12, 13, 14-year-old brother was used the way he was used, and he went along with it. And she highly resented that he was treated that way by these self-serving nobles.
Now, you talked about, as I understand it, the nobles in Spain at this point had an awful lot of power. And later on, when she's reigning, and I guess we'll talk about that next week, she did a lot to sort of turn down the power of these nobles. But,
yes, of course, that's what most the effective rulers of the Renaissance were doing all over Europe. They were reigning in the nobility and creating the modern state. Mm-hmm. And Queen Isabel had a lot of nobles to contend with who had received grants of land from the two previous weak kings, mm-hmm. John II and Henry IV, alienated a lot of crown property in order to get the support of these nobles and those nobles. And Queen Isabel gradually was able to... regain control of a lot of those lands, control for the crown, because the proceeds from those lands were supposed to support the poor and the armies and other functions of the government.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about the proxy war that was being fought by different factions using these young princes and princesses.
Mm-hmm.
There was a character by the name of Pacheco who was opposed to Isabel ever coming to the throne. Can you talk a little bit about him and the sort of machinations?
Indeed. I'm glad you asked. Yes. Well, John II was controlled by a man named Alvaro de Luna. And Henry IV was controlled by Juan Pacheco, who was the Marquis of Villena. And Juan Pacheco did not want to see Isabel gain power. So he wanted to either control her or get rid of her. So at one point, he tried to marry her to his brother, who was the master of the Order of Calatrava, who was supposed to be celibate, but everybody knew he was far from.
And he was something like 45 years old at the time.
Yes, and basically an old lecher he had become. And Isabel prayed and prayed and prayed that wouldn't happen. And guess what? He got sick and in 24 hours died right before the wedding. You know, and that's when I think Isabel realized the power of prayer.
Uh-huh.
Or at least she felt that it was because she had prayed day and night for 2-3 days. So that didn't work out. And then the others were attempts to marry her into the royal families of either Portugal or France so that she would leave. And the one that of the two cases, the one that was the most important was trying to marry her to the King of Portugal, who was a widower. Also, I mean, I think this one was in his 50s. Alphonse V of Portugal. He invaded Castile. And, I mean, he was determined he was going to rule either through Juana, marrying Juana, or marrying Isabel. One way or the other, he was determined that Portugal and Castile would be ruled, you know, by one king, and then they would have a common heir, supposedly. So that was all the Marquis of Villena, all of Pacheco's doings.
Mm-hmm.
And Isabel managed to get the best of them by marrying Ferdinand
of
Aragon.
Did Pacheco sense, you think, in this young girl, her strength of character, and that she wouldn't be the kind of person that he could keep under her thumb, under his thumb?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. She was very discreet as a teenager. But it was obvious she wasn't participating in any of the scandals or any of the schemes, that she was keeping her own counsel and not doing anything inappropriate, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was crystal clear. So she married Ferdinand, who was heir to the crown of Aragon. Now, they were related. They were second cousins. The royal family of Aragon descended from the original medieval royal family of Aragon died out. And so a prince of Castile, probably a great uncle of Isabel's, had been invited to become king of Aragon. So the two royal families were related, and the Trastamaras of Aragon owned a lot of property in Castile. So Ferdinand was the son of John II of Aragon. So we have two Johns IIs here, Isabel's father in Castile and Ferdinand's father in Aragon. And he was always very involved in Castilian affairs, and he desperately wanted to see his son marry Isabel. Aragon was much smaller than Castile, and Aragon was constantly fighting France. The French had a tendency over the centuries to invade Spain on the Aragonese side of the Pyrenees many, many times.
Mm-hmm. And,
so
yeah,
he wanted.
Later on, there would be a choice, but that Ferdinand would have between fighting Muslims and fighting the French, I think, and didn't
probably his, so.
And
yes,
his wife prevailed on him to not fight Christians, but Muslims.
Exactly. So John II did everything he could to help along the cause of his son. And, of course, Isabel had never seen Ferdinand, but she knew that he was a teenager. He was actually 1 year younger than she, that he was competent. He already was a fighter and had been involved in wars, had become a general. You know, everybody said he was intelligent. And so she thought, well, if I marry him, I won't have to leave Castile.
Mm-hmm. But he was a bit rough around the edges, right? He was a bit
exactly, yes. But she made sure in the marriage contract that it was clear he was going to have to live with her in Castile, not she live in Aragon.
Mm-hmm.
His father was willing to accept any conditions in order to bring this about. And Isabel made sure that the people representing her negotiated to her benefit.
Wow, amazing. Smart lady. And when,
smart young girl. I mean, she was 18 when she got married. He was 17.
And when they married, she became queen consort of Aragon, and he became, let's see, he retained his title as king of Aragon, and she as queen of Castile. And they each became consort of the other, correct?
Yes. Now, bear in mind, he did not inherit the crown of Aragon until his father died, which was about 5 years after they were married.
Okay, but he got the title to it. He had the title.
Right, but his father had already made him king of Sicily to make sure, had passed on the crown of Sicily to make sure that that the wedding would be a marriage of equals but in Isabel and he agreed that they would rule jointly in Castile, that documents would have both of their names, and in order to be very diplomatic, Isabel said, and we'll put your name first, dear.
Uh-huh.
But she made the decisions if they disagreed on anything that had to do with Castile.
And that was pretty rare, wasn't it?
Very, very. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, as queen consort of Aragon, she took a back seat because she wasn't the ruler of Aragon, number one. And number two, their succession laws were different, and women could not rule in Aragon.
So they had a Salic law?
They had a semi-Salic law of some sort or another,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And so she went to Aragon a number of times with him for short periods, but they spent most of their time together in Castile, or sometimes he had to absent himself and go do something in Aragon and Catalonia and leave her for a few months.
So it was a nice place to visit, but she didn't want to live there.
Well, they went when they went because their children had to be sworn in as heirs. Mm-hmm. They went sometimes when the parliament, the Cortes, was meeting, but she didn't want to be absent from Castile for very long.
Okay. So we're going to go to break now, Doctor, and we'll come back and we'll continue our conversation about Isabel la Católica and her holy life. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Channel of the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be.
You're listening to Reconquest with Brother Andre Marie, seeking that which was lost and fighting for it, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.